Good afternoon, everyone. What I would like to go into was something that had come up in our discussion about the calendar, although it isn't directly connected with the calendar. It had to do with Abraham. And I mentioned, and this is seems to me to be a kind of a dichotomy from what they believe, because they believe they in the Old Testament. I mean, this is just absolutely, there isn't any question about it, what they believe as far as the Old Testament is concerned. And when we were talking about the different days and the fact that, you know, observing these days, and they always point back to Israel, and we had just been talking about like the land rest, etc. And well, I said Abraham kept the commandments, the laws, and the statutes. I mean, he kept all of these things, and he jumped in there and he said, "Oh no, he didn't. I don't believe he did. He was just a herder, and so then he wouldn't have any reason to rest the land. He wouldn't know about these things." And so, and I thought, well, you know, he was really quite adamant about it. I thought, well, I had another thought. I mean, I didn't look at Abraham as being restricted, the father of the faithful. I mean, I looked at Abraham as being really quite informed and quite a dedicated man to God's laws, statutes, and judgments. So I thought, well, this would be a good thing for us to look at today. Short, we can cover it, I think, in a relatively short time. If we open our Bibles to Genesis chapter 26, we'll take a look at that particular statement. And it says in verse 5, it says, well, we probably should start in verse 4. This is God speaking to Isaac. And he said, well, we might as well start in verse 1. There was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Then the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For you and your descendants I will give all the lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father." So we understand, if we would go back to Genesis chapter 12 and come forward from there, that these promises that God gave to Abraham were conditional promises. And when we think about this, we think about what Mr. Armstrong said, you know, it's a matter of choice on our part. So therefore, the promises that we have are conditional. There isn't any question about the fact that the promises of eternal life is a conditional promise. It's not a guarantee. We clearly understand this. So, but you can see how, you know, see how it fits in here with what is being told to Isaac. And continuing on in verse 4, and he says, "I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven, and I will give to you, to your descendants, all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." Now, why is it that this is going to happen? Because, well, he made an agreement with Abraham. And we have to remember that, you know, this is just the way of a reminder that the covenants that God made, God was the greater making the covenant to the lesser. And so the covenant has its stipulations in it, its requirements. And so therefore, who is able to put those requirements in? Not the person, not the lesser, but the greater. And so God being the greater, obviously, he puts the requirements in. And in verse 5 it says, Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And, you know, and I had quoted that to him, of course, and I don't believe that he did. Well, I don't know. It says so. But I didn't, you know. Now, there is a certain thing that you recognize. And in this particular case, I recognize that this would be like beating a dead horse. You know, you try to, the horse is dead, he's not going to get up and pull your wagon for you, no matter how much you beat him. And so, okay. Just let it go at that. So, I thought that we could look at this. In a way, we need to, in a sense, to understand the kind of person that Abraham was. And then all we have to do is think about his history, what this man did. He was more than an ordinary person. It's pretty obvious when you read the accounts of what Abraham did and where he came from. He came out of a society that that had human sacrifice. And it wasn't a society, you know, they think about the knuckle-dragging Neanderthals or something like this, but these people were quite educated, especially the upper class. You see, you have that division of education even back then, and you have it to a certain extent today. And you can see that if you keep people uneducated, of course, they are dealing from a position of weakness because you can tell them. It's almost like the Bible, you know, people accept what they're being told instead of checking it out, reading it out, studying it out. Well, if you can't read, and basically down in Costa Rica, that was the way the situation is. Most of the people cannot read or write, and so if they're being taught, they're naturally going to follow what Bill is going to teach them. Now, maybe eventually there might be some kind of a change or something like this, I don't know, but basically this is how it is going to work there. Now, I'm not saying that this man is empire building or anything like that. I didn't exactly get that impression. So, and it isn't like he was trying to live high, because he wasn't. I mean, he was just living. That's the way I would look at it. It's basically how I would live. And so, well, let's take a look at these. It says the first word is because, and this word is 6118 in Strong's. I think we should look at, we're going to look at all of these words and see what the meanings are so that we can more accurately understand what God is saying here about Abraham. And that word 6118 is rather basic, simple meaning. It says it's a masculine noun having an adverbial sense of consequence, because. It basically means and the last reason for something. It is used as a conjunction meaning because. And they cite different places that you can look this word up and see it. And that's exactly what this means. In what God is saying here, he says, because, as a result of what Abraham did, because Abraham obeyed. That's the next word, obeyed. He said, because of that, as a result of that, you can put it in different terms, as a result of that, there was consequences. And the next word that we're going to look at is 8085, and it means obey. And here's what it says, a verb meaning to hear, to obey, to listen, to be heard, of, to be regarded, to cause to hear, to proclaim, to sound aloud. A verb basically means to hear, and in context expresses various connotations of this most famous use of this word is introduced in the Shemana. Hear, O Israel, followed by the content that the Israelites are to understand about the Lord their God and how they are to respond to Him. And it points out Deuteronomy 6, so I think that would be a good place to go to is Deuteronomy 6, so let's open our Bibles to that verse and take a look at that, because it's going to fit right in with what we're talking about. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4, it says, hear, O Israel, the Eternal, our God, the Lord is one. And that word, of course, hear, that's the word 8085. And so what is what is it that, you know, that the people are going to hear? And he says in verse 5, you shall love the Eternal your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you today, you shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk to them when you sit in your house, or when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as the frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house, on your gates. So what is it? You know, well, obviously, he's telling them, you got to obey. You got to hear and obey as the result of God's laws. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Let's just turn over and we'll start in verse 1. And read that, and it says, and Moses called all Israel and said to them, hear, O Israel, again, that's the same word, the statutes and the judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. So, sounds pretty much like the same terminology that God used back in the book of Genesis about Abraham. And he goes on in verse 2, and the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. And so then he goes through, and we have the commandments, of course. And so we can see that, well, this idea of hearing and obeying are implicit in this understanding of these verses. And so when we think about what is said about Abraham back in Genesis 26, well, fits right in. And so I should have told you to keep your place in Genesis 26, because we need to go back there and continue to look at the different words. And he said, because Abraham, as a result, Abraham obeyed, he heard, and as a result of hearing, then something more came forth because of what he heard. He obeyed my voice. And so voice is 6963 in Strong's. So we'll take a look at the meaning of that word. 69:63. It's a masculine noun meaning voice, sound, noise, a cry. This is an all-encompassing word that is used of any kind of sound, and it describes God's voice in the Garden of Eden. So here again, we look at that, and we would understand that what is being, in a sense, being talked about here. Genesis 3, 8, and 10. Human voice of speech also is included in that, singing, the sound of horses' hooves. So in other words, basically it is really used as, you know, whatever is being, producing the sound. In this particular case, God is saying in the first person here, he's talking in the first person, and he's saying, because Abraham obeyed the sound of my voice, me, God, because of that. And see, that's where voice comes in. And there is a really strong connection here with this. Now, we can go to, let's see, what is the next word? My voice, and kept, my charge. Kept is another separate word, and it's 8104. And if we take a look at 8104, we'll see what it means. And it says a verb meaning to watch, to keep, to preserve, to guard, to be careful, to watch over, to watch carefully over, to be on one's guard. A verb means to watch, to guard, to care for. And Adam and Eve were to watch over and care for the Garden of Eden where the Lord had placed them. So you can see that this word watch, this word kept, it's an important word because it doesn't mean, it means to keep watch as one is under obligation, like a sentry is under obligation to watch, right? This is the idea of that word. It's not like, well, I'm looking out at the sunrise this morning. Well, that's not the idea. The idea, the implication here is that there's a requirement to watch. What do we talk about in the New Testament? What is it that we are to be, we were instructed by Christ to do? We were instructed to watch the things that are taking place, and come to recognize them. Now, while we were gone, on the day that we returned, we found out that there was this big upset in an election. And I'm thinking, now this is going in, maybe this I don't know, what does this mean when you have a conservative being elected, and the way the tenor of the whole country is looking, it appears to be looking like people are not happy with what has been going on with the liberal stance. Well, this would include abortion and a lot of the other things that are taking place, gay marriage, etc., etc. And people are finally saying, well, look, this is, you know, you didn't get the message, and maybe this would give them a message. And kind of puzzled over that, because this means that, are we turning back? This is something that I think that you should think about. Because, and at first blunt appearance, the first appearance you get is, maybe there's going to be some reform. And if there's reform, maybe that means that things aren't going to happen as fast as what we're thinking maybe that they should be happening. Just something that we might address in the future, but it was an interesting thing. Along with, of course, the earthquake in Haiti, which we found out about, that we were able to find out about the election change. We found out on the day that we returned. So if we think about this, you know, this idea of watching, well, it carries through. And so Abraham, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, so, you know, his focus was not a focus of, you know, well, maybe I should or shouldn't. It was like a sentry. He recognized that he had to do this. You see, that's the difference. And it's an important thing for us to consider. And then the word for charge is 49:31. So we can look at 49:31 and see exactly what the meaning of that word is, 49:31, and it's a feminine noun meaning guard, charge, duty. The word comes from the verb semar, 8104, meaning to watch, to keep, to protect, or guard, and it has the multiplicity of usage in the most basic sense. It describes guarded place. So you can see how the two words here are fitting together. And you keep watch, you guard. This is basically what God is saying, you know. He's saying, look, Abraham did these things, my charge, my commandments, and that word, my commandments, is 4687, the commandments. Well, you would expect 4687, you would expect, well, what are God's commandments? We'll see what this particular word means. It's a feminine noun meaning a commandment. It can apply to the edicts issued by a human being, most likely the king. And he gives different, you know, you could go to Esther and Kings, Proverbs, Isaiah, and all of these places where you could see how this command is meant. It can also relate to the general corpus of human precepts or a body of teachings. On the other hand, this expression can reference God's commands. The Pentateuch, this is the only usage in the Pentateuch. This is the only usage. It does not refer to human commandments. In the singular, it may distinguish certain commandments. Yet it appears most frequently in the plural to designate the entire corpus of divine law and instruction. And you know what they give? They give Genesis 26:5, which in effect is what this is saying. In other words, what its meaning is quite clear. That in total, it represents, because who is speaking here? God is the one who is doing the speaking. So it's his commandments, it's his laws, and so therefore this is what he's saying. Look, Abraham, he followed my commandments and in total. That means the total, the whole thing, the whole ball of wax, all put together. That's the implication. And of course, what did we just see when we went back into the book of Deuteronomy? We saw exactly the same thing. The same terminology is being used. And so it's that word, if we can understand it, it means, and when God is speaking, he's saying, my commandments in total, the whole unit put together. It represents a block of understanding. And shouldn't be really hard for us to grasp this and to understand that, well, wait a minute, Abraham, he grasped and understood and kept the requirements, didn't he? He kept these requirements. Now, pointed out, they said, well, you know, he was just a sheep herder, basically. And so he why would he keep land laws? You know, so he wouldn't be keeping those laws. Well, I don't necessarily, with my understanding of farming, I look at things a bit differently. Of course, you know that this is understandable. Now, I can go back to my family. And my grandfather, we always referred to him as a wheat farmer. I mean, this is basically, this was what he was referred to. But let's say that you don't necessarily talk about farming wheat, and you just talk about raising cattle. Well, my grandfather raised a lot of cattle. And so if he had a large herd of cattle and sheep, which he did, and other animals, horses, and the whole nine yards that went to farming back in the late 1800s and 1900s, early 1900s, then you would might say, well, wait a minute. If you don't know that he was raising grain, you might say, well, he was a cattleman. And he was a cattleman, but he was also raised grain. And this is the thing that when we start looking at Abraham, Abraham was no local yokel farmer that just had a bunch of animals. To me, it is quite clear because he had a large group of men that worked for him or that were his slaves or indentured men who worked for him. And as a result of that, those men, they only ate meat? That's pretty hard to swallow, right? I mean, when you talk about the fact that you see when the two men or the three men showed up at Abraham's tent and he had Sarah prepare, what did she prepare? Well, she prepared bread, unleavened bread at the time. And so, that was unleavened bread. I wonder if there was a reason for that. Well, anyway, we can see that he had to have been raising grain to feed his people. And if he was raising grain, he followed the instructions that God gave about land usage. Just follows, this is the way it would be. So when we see this, it isn't hard for us to grasp that principle, that this man did more than just, you know, follow the meat laws, you might say, and that you think that he didn't follow the laws of that require people to loan money to, you know, without interest. You think that maybe he didn't know that and didn't do that? I think that he did. Now, you might also, I don't want to miss this, so we need to finish this at least. Continue on in the word study here. We're looking at my statutes, which is the next word we want to look at, and it's 2708, and so we'll see what 2708, what that word has to mean. Pages are sticking together. 2708 is a noun meaning statute, an ordinance, anything prescribed. It serves as a feminine of hog. And so since its basic meaning is not specific, the word takes on a different connotation in each context. Its most common meaning is decrees, statutes, or a synonym for these words. The decree of the Lord could be oral or written. They may be God's well-known. They made God's will known and gave divine direction to his people. Abraham kept them evidently before they were written down. And, of course, it goes back to Genesis 26:5. Now, this is probably the point. Well, how did he know about all these things? They weren't written down. We understand, and as pointed out from the very beginning in Genesis, God did not leave Adam and Eve without knowledge. He taught them. He prepared them. And this is true. As we go through, you can see that Enoch walked with God and Noah walked with God. Well, what does that mean? Well, they had a working relationship with God. And the same thing is true. This is how he knew what he needed to do and what he should do. So we have the statutes and my laws. The laws is, of course, that is really more or less self-evident, right? I mean, that word for laws, my laws, you know, that's the same word that's applied to the commandments. Now, of course, you know, well, you know, we can't see anywhere in the book of Genesis outright where God said, no, wait a minute, you can't commit adultery, you can't do this, you can't do that. Or, in other words, they were prohibited things that protected the family, that protected people, and that gave them the correct understanding of their Maker. That's what this is all about. And so, in a way, sometimes we look at things like this simple scripture here, and we basically, we either accept it or we don't accept it in a way.